If times and conditions become difficult, if the economic conditions change, go harder.
Welcome to the Savvy Dentist Podcast with Dr. Jesse Green, the show where great dentistry meets great business. Listen in each week as we bring you an inspiring person who will share their story, ideas, and business techniques to help you create a practice and a life you love. And now introducing your host, Dr. Jesse Green.
Welcome back to the Savvy Dentist Podcast, the show where great dentistry meets great business. In today's episode, we're having a conversation with Harry Margaret, the founder and principal dentist at East Bentley Dental Group in Melbourne. Harry is well known in the Australasian dental scene. He's been a fixture on the stage for quite a while. And what I love about talking to Harry is there is no nonsense. He's a straight shooter, straight talker. And what Harry's going to be sharing in this particular interview is his views about how to build a successful enterprise. And he's speaking from experience because East Bentley Dental Group is terrifically successful on any particular metric that you might choose to use to measure its success by, whether it's financial, whether it's by, you know, doing good things by patients, whether it's, you know, engagement with the community and other things along those lines. Harry has seen a lot, done a lot. And what I love about Harry is he brings a depth of experience that comes with being around a while, and he's seen things come and go. He's, you know, got principles that work no matter what the economic circumstances, no matter what's happening in the economy. And Harry is, you know, someone who walks the walk rather than just talking the talk. And he is, you know, talking from experience, not just from theory. So in this interview, Harry talks a lot about, you know, the pros and cons of, you know, owning multiple practices. He talks about creating great teams. He talks about, you know, how he's been able to create a business from scratch with a vision in mind that was always about him having a leveraged operation. He shares lots and lots of wisdom in this conversation. And as always, I'd encourage everyone to have pen and paper handy, because what Harry shares in this particular conversation should be a manual for anyone just starting a practice and going forth in their own career. I hope you enjoy the conversation as much as I enjoyed bringing it to you. So without any further ado, here's Dr. Harry Margaret. Dr. Harry Margaret from the East Bentley Dental Group, welcome to the Savvy Dentist Podcast. It's great to have you here. How are you, mate?
Fantastic, Jesse. Always great to speak to you.
Oh, mate. Well, we've had a few chats over the last little while, and I ran into you a little while ago at the Gold Coast. I was up there for an event, and you were having dinner at the same restaurant as I was, at that Greek restaurant. Do you remember bumping into each other?
I certainly do. It's a great place to eat and a great place to make contacts.
It was indeed. Listen, Harry, you've been running the East Bentley Dental Group now for a long time. It's a practice which is, you know, well-regarded. It's well-established. You've been around. You've seen it. You've done it. Got the t-shirt and more. I wanted to really spend a bit of time today just kind of unpacking some of the things that you've learned along the way, where you see the future trends, what do you see as the opportunities, equally where the risks are. But before we kind of get into that, I'm wondering if you can give us a bit of an understanding of how East Bentley Dental Group came to be.
Yeah, I'd love to do that. I'd been working as a general dentist in Adelaide, where I graduated, with people that, in my view, had, you know, limited vision. I came to Melbourne and I was working in the hospital, foolishly doing a master's degree in endodontics. I say foolishly because, as we know now, everybody's man and his dog does endodontics, and they're all using electronic gear. The way East Bentley Dental Group came about is that I went out into the suburbs and I started researching areas that had what I thought was good growth. And the reason I started doing that was because earlier I'd been in Canada and the United States with a large group called Trident or Trident Dental, and they had multiple group practices all over the Canadian coastline and North America. And what they'd done is done fantastic homework, where they'd looked at the numbers of people moving into different areas, and they taught me an amazing social demographic story that you can basically set up a dental practice anywhere if all the numbers, and I think you call them KPIs, are the things that make sense. So what happened to me was, I fell upon a practice in the southeastern suburbs of Melbourne that had one old dentist in it. And I walked in there and I noticed that it was in a building that had plenty of scope. He was using one room. There was enough room for another six surgeries at least, which was key in my mind. Downstairs, there was an old chemist shop that was going to pack up one day. So I figured that in my thinking, there was another five to six surgeries down there. And basically bought the practice at an expensive price. I paid a huge amount of money. He wanted $11,000. He said if I didn't pay him on the 23rd of December 1974, he said he was going to walk out the front door on Christmas Day, throw the key in the gutter, lock the door and walk away. And foolishly, I said, oh, that's good. I'll be sitting in the gutter waiting for the key. And he said, oh, you're going to be a smart aleck. It's going to cost you $13,000. So I bought the practice for $13,000. And me and two mates absolutely gutted the one room that he had there over Christmas for 2 weeks. We worked like slaves to get it set up to go. And essentially from day one, my vision, Jesse, was always that I was going to hire other dentists, right? From day one, it was always going to be not about me. It was never going to be about Dr. Harry Margaret Dentist. It was going to be about a group, a vision, a practice, lots of dentists doing lots of services. And sorry for the long-winded answer, but it was always about the long-term plan, not about the short-term vision. So East Bentley Dental Group came to be as a group, basically, as I always thought that if I didn't want to do the surgical extractions, Tom Jones or Bill Smith would.
Yeah, I think that's fantastic. And what I'm hearing very clearly, Harry, in your response there is that, you know, it was done with a specific intent. There's a plan from the beginning. You knew precisely what it is you wanted to achieve and you set about doing it. Interesting comment as well, Harry, though. I love the fact that you viewed the premises as having, you know, a potential six surgeries upstairs and, you know, potentially more when the chemist went downstairs, which leads me to a question because, and I'll come back to the East Bentley story in a second, but yeah, there's a lot of trends going on at the moment. I talk a lot about, you know, becoming profitable, scalable, and ultimately valuable in the marketplace. And, you know, my view is that when you're profitable, you make an income. When you're scaled or leveraged, you've created a real business, a true business. And when you're valuable, you kind of investor ready and you've got something, you know, that's unique and, you know, carries real value in the marketplace. And you've done all of that. But Harry, one of the things I've observed is there's a trend to owning multiple practices at the moment. And in an effort to become scaled and, you know, carve out a bit of market share. You know, for most people, I sometimes wonder whether it's simpler to have one big practice like you've got with 12 operatories or however many you've got there versus two or three practices with three or four rooms. Do you have a view around that, or is it horses for courses? Or, I mean, it probably is horses for courses, but what's your view?
No, I have a very strong view on that, and I agree with all of your three market principles, the one, two, three, finishing up with valuable. In my view, and I did have six practices at one stage, there is absolutely, as then, as now, there is no common sense in owning six practices. Absolutely none, zero. And particularly with the paradigm shift that's going on in dentistry right now, it is almost impossible. You cannot tell me as an old guy that having six sets of overheads, six sets of staff issues, six sets of rentals, etc., is either sensible, practical, or profitable. In my view, and we, you know, we've been speaking about this as long as we've been friends for a long time, the sustainable model going forward is the one practice in the one location with one set of overheads that, as you've just said, is scalable, profitable, and valuable. Because to have a number of locations, I mean, I had a six figure turnover, and I had a shocking amount of profit when I was doing that. When as the minute I started selling off all those other smaller joints, East Bentley Dental Group came into its own. So I 101% agree with you that the best way forward is to have one location, one set of overheads, one thing you can control. I mean, it's unlike running a McDonald's where you've got, you know, the same people, the same menu, the same foods, and you've got central control. When you're running a private dental practice, one location is the go. I think that these people that are doing, and I hear about it every day in Melbourne. I mean, I get phone calls constantly from real estate agents and bankers, et cetera, saying, do you think this is a good idea? And if the bankers and the real estate agents don't think it's a good idea, then I don't think it's a good idea either.
Yeah, and I think it's the very rare person. I mean, I know some people that carry it off and do it all right, but I think for most people, Harry, their bandwidth is going to be blown out of the water thinking about six lots of staff hassles alone. I mean, that's just that's a lot of staffing worries.
I think that the people that tell you that they're carrying it off, and I've had a few people in touch with me by phone, you know, when you ask them the piercing, searing questions, about, they very quickly say, oh, well, yeah, I'm not particularly worried about that or this, you know. And then you ask them about the P&L and they suddenly back off. Look, for those people that I think, and I'm probably going to go out on a limb here and say, well, you know, it's about an ego trip. This is not about ego. You know, I've always had the view that, you know, if you're going to be a professional and you're in a business, well, you've got to run it business-like. I mean, your three principles are absolutely poignant, you know, scalable, profitable, valuable. You've got to be in a position where doing this is a profitable venture. To have multiple locations, I mean, I don't think anything dramatically has changed since I tried to do it in the 70s and 80s. In fact, it's exactly the same. Overhead, profit, you need to have one or the other. Now, if you want to have multiple locations and walk around beating your chest saying, well, look at all these locations I've got. I mean, the guys that probably ring you and ask you for consultancy advice are in that situation. Oh, you know, I've got all these locations, but I'm not making any money. Back to the point, do I think it's a good idea? I don't think so.
Fair enough. So given that that's a bit of a trend at the moment in terms of the profession, yeah, there's the corporatization of dentistry, there's the increased influence of health insurance companies. There's obviously some shifting sands as we speak. Where do you see younger practice owners kind of coming unstuck at the moment? What do you see some of the challenges that they're facing?
I see the same thing every day, Jesse, as I'm sure you do. Most of the younger practitioners that I see or that I see making comments are all starting to cut into their overhead, cut into their profit margins. They're either trying to discount, cut prices, cut slash here, slash cut this. It's okay if you're slashing costs, but if you keep slashing profit margins, you've got no chance. The basic problem I see with a lot of the younger dentists is chasing a widget that's going to give them a huge profit while in the background slashing prices, giving things away for free, doing discount this and discount that. I started my practice in an area of Melbourne in 1974, which was a lower working class area, right? I did not go out with the idea, well, I'll start giving away things for nothing, because, you know, you just can't do that. Now, the idea today, you know, where it's no gap, no this, no that, you know, we're going to do things for free or give things away. I think younger practitioners that view that by attracting a crowd that says, well, what can I get for nothing? I mean, my father, bless him, you know, when he was a laborer, said, you know, anything you get for nothing, as I'm sure your dad's told you, is probably worth that. It's probably not worth anything, right? If younger practitioners were to adhere to the principle of good, better, best, or as one of my teachers in North America said to me, Harry, no matter what you do in dentistry, provide dentistry that looks good, feels good, and lasts a long time. He said people very quickly forget about the price after they see the quality in the long term. And I think you've written about that in one of your previous articles, or I vaguely remember you quoting that.
Yeah.
Younger practitioners that look at that are doomed to fail. And this multiple practice concept mentality, it's ridiculous. The other thing which is really wrong is the service mix. And I think you've spoken about this in one of your articles previously. The service mix that you need today is extensive. And unless you're going to go out and get the training yourself, you've got to be prepared to hire people who are prepared to do it. Those younger practitioners that are running around saying, well, you know, I'm only going to do crowns and Botox injections, I think they'll very quickly be finding themselves with some problems on their hands.
Yeah, look, completely. I think, you know, it's all good to be having the upper echelons of treatment on offer. You know, we all love to do crown and bridge. We all love to do implants, ortho, yeah, whatever it is. But I tell you, in our practice, Harry, the most common prosthetic, you know, treatment that we provide is still the single unit crown. And, you know, restoratively, you know, the old, you know, one or two surface composite resin, you know, we do a lot of that. And, you know, if we do it well, it lasts, as you say, a good, better, best. If we adopt that philosophy that you've outlined, we remain profitable. So we've kind of outlined some of the missteps or the potential potholes on the journey. Where do you see the opportunities, Harry? Because, again, sometimes when you look at the tea leaves and you see what's written in magazines or forums or whatever, it sometimes feels a little bit negative. Now, I'm a glasses half full kind of guy by nature, and I always think that when there's turmoil, there's opportunity. And so there's plenty of turmoil, so I'm thinking there's plenty of opportunity. But where do you see the opportunity?
I see the same as you. I'm a glass half full person. The opportunities are in the following areas that I think. First of all, I think that there's an incredible opportunity for younger practitioners to band together and start to form their own group practices. The second thing that I see is that young dentists who are prepared to offer what I call, I don't like the word holistic because I don't think there's anything to it, but I think younger practitioners who are prepared to spend time discussing things like dietary advice, about airway, breathing, etc. Younger practitioners who are prepared to extend the scope of treatment to actually start treating the patient as a walking piece of machinery rather than a set of ivories that need to be adhered to or drilled into. The third opportunity I see, which is, I think, absolutely extensive, and if I was a younger man, I'd probably be doing it myself, would be to actually go about doing something I did in the 70s, which is start what was called a friendly society. A friendly society is more or less like a cricket club with a committee where you actually start banding together and offering services which are unique to your particular product line. Now, you might say, oh, well, it's been done before. Yeah, well, it has been done before, but it still represents a foregoing opportunity. The opportunity is there to then attract large groups of people to follow you for treatment, such as the firemen's union or the labour workers or the miscellaneous workers union. That's another opportunity. And finally, well, not finally, I think that the opportunity in sedation dentistry and orthodontics is amazing. Now, that's probably a hot topic because the Orthodontic Society are not happy about GPs doing that, right?
Not at all.
They're not happy about it at all, and they're starting to write lots and lots of articles about it, and that's okay. That's good. But you know what? The opportunity to expand into that area. I started doing orthodontics virtually the day I got out of dental school, 1973. Yes, I was only doing simple things, and I went on to do other things, which we won't talk about because it's out there in the public domain already. But what I found was that represented an area of growth and development in the general practice, which I had never, ever thought possible. And in actual fact, the orthodontic practice, under my own esteem, built up from a $300,000 a year business to a $1.6 million a year business, which was amazing. And I had to hire more people to do it. In fact, in the end, I had to hire previously trained specialist orthodontists from overseas to come in and work as GPs to do the work. But that, to me, are the main key areas. Finally, I think dentists who are prepared to go to the marketplace and come up with better funding opportunities, you know, something realistic, something where they entertain the idea of helping people to get the dentistry they want and show that they care, these opportunities are endless, absolutely endless. In the area of implants, right, I'm starting to develop a little bit of a disquiet of mind about implants. I've been around since implants began, you know, when the steel blades were the things that people were throwing in. I watched all of those fall out. And now we've come right through to titanium. And what am I starting to see? I'm starting to see some of these big titanium cases starting to fail, right? Now, this is really starting to worry me because, you know, I think, we should be doing dentistry that looks good, feels good, and lasts a long time. But it was quite interesting. One of my teachers in Oregon in the United States who taught me how to do orthodontics, he said, you know what? My advice to you, young man, is to stick to stuff that's going to be around even after you're gone. And I think there's a negative opportunity there in that area of implants. But who knows? I probably won't be around to see it.
Well, it's an interesting thing, actually. I was talking to one of the periodontists here in Canberra, and we're just having a conversation about implants as well. And it seems to me, you know, going back 10 years ago, implants were kind of going in a little more freely. It was obviously different economic circumstances back then, but now, speaking to this particular perio, he's a bit more circumspect about what he's putting in and where now and for whom. And I think I think you're probably right there, Harry. I think there's probably something in that. So a little bit of caution.
I do think there is one remaining opportunity, and I'm probably going to be burnt at the stake for this one. But
I'll put the water on you, mate. Don't worry.
Get on you. Look, I took the view many, many years ago when this whole preferred provider nonsense started that, you know, there was an opportunity here. Now, most of my colleagues, you know, were absolutely up in arms about it. They said, how can you do this? You know, this will be the beginning of the end of dentistry as we know it, and all fees will be controlled and managed and blah, blah, blah. Well, Jesse, I'm here to tell you that some 25, almost 30 years later after I started in that experience, absolutely the contrary has happened. Not only have we been receiving patients coming into the practice, we've been getting people who are more than happy to step outside and have more of the sophisticated dentistry, even if it doesn't cover under their insurance policy. And with the insurance funds raising their fees and people leaving a lot of these health funds now, those people stick with that practice. So I think there's another hidden negative positive opportunity right there. If it's still available, I don't know. I haven't been researching it for a while.
Yeah, I think that, you know, again, my philosophy on this, Harry, because you know, this is something that comes up in the forums and it's been in the forum over the last month or two, is, you know, preferred provider versus non-preferred provider. And I really think that, you know, I'm of the view we're not preferred providers in our practice, and that's fine. That's just a choice we've made. But I'm also of the view that you can run a perfectly good practice, whether you are or are not a preferred provider. What I find as a challenge with some of the preferred provider practices, and I'm probably going to be burnt at the stake for this myself, so hopefully you'll carry the water buckets for me.
I will. Yeah.
But the thing around that is, in my experience, Harry, you're quite a commercially astute guy. And I know that from plenty of our conversations gone by, my challenge with some preferred provider practices, they've given up thinking about their practice. They've kind of handed over responsibility for it to someone else. And I think that's the risk. But I think if you remain commercially astute, if you remain engaged and you know, you're a preferred provider, then you can run just as good a practice with or without it. But the key differentiator for me between good and poor practices is the level of engagement or commercial acumen of the person running it. And I think that's the separating factor for me rather than the preferred providership.
Well, Jesse, it's a very, very kind comment. I'm going to have to agree with you because as we've always said in our various conversations over the years, is that it is commercial astuteness, if I can coin a phrase, that will keep people out there bouncing around. The number of times I've walked into dental practices over the years and said, please show me your P&Ls, they say, I don't know what you tell us, right? I mean, I understand there are a lot of dentists who get very fired up and say, look, we shouldn't be talking about business. We shouldn't be talking about profit. We should be talking about taking care of patients. Well, you know, the common sense business people, the commercially astute people know that you cannot run a proper business unless you are taking care of patients and you are taking care of their treatment plans. But commercial astuteness seems to be at odds or variance with dentists, doctors, and specialists. It is a serious problem. How people buy tools and then try to validate the commercial reality of them. I mean, you know as well as I do, I've always had a bit of a problem with CEREC, and I'll probably get burnt at the stake yet again with CEREC people for this one. But CEREC to me is, here's someone taking an hour and a half to do a restoration, whereas today, you know, if you're a commercially astute dentist, and you're a good dentist, you can do a crown preparation in about 20 minutes, if you know what you're doing, in about 20 minutes, and you can take an impression and you can have it temporized in about that time, and you can use a reasonably astute laboratory, you know, around about the traps, and we know all where they are, and you can get a crown that comes back and, you know, 9 times out of 10 it fits pretty well, looks pretty good, and the job is done without having to spend $174,000 on all this other machinery. But again, commercial astuteness. You know, a dentist rang me in March, at the end of March, and he said, oh, I'm going to buy myself one of those hematological spinning machines. I said, that's fantastic. I said, they're about $250,000, aren't they? He said, that's right. I said, how many implants are you doing? He said, none. I said, well, when are you going to start? He said, when I get the machine. And you see, the examples of that are everywhere, you know, absolutely everywhere. You don't have to be a smart guy. You've got to be, as you say, and we should coin that phrase, commercially astute in this industry, because there is no other way. Otherwise, you've got all these people beating their chests and crying, well, how come I'm not making any money? You know, I think I spoke to you about the dentist at Ramian said he wanted to sell his practice that's doing $222,000 a year, and he wants $350,000 for it, and the profit margin is $60,000.
There's no way known. No way known. And to quote that wonderful movie, The Castle, tell him he's dreaming.
Yeah.
Straight to the pool room. Hey, listen.
Like that, yeah.
Yeah, listen, mate, I wanted to unpack a little bit more about your journey because, you know, having graduated, you know, in the 70s and come through, you know, different economic times, but nonetheless turbulent. I mean, the 70s, you know, there was all sorts of things happening. Same with the 80s, the 90s, the recession we had to have. And of course, now we're in the, you know, 2016-17 we are now. And, you know, the thing that I always find is the only constant is change. And what I guess I wanted to unpack, Harry, is, you know, for all the subtle differences over the years, you know, history does tend to repeat itself. And I wanted to kind of create a bit of a log of lessons learned by Harry Margett. You know, what would be some of the, you know, really good bits of advice you've had along the way, or some of the poor bits of advice, or things that you think have worked well for you especially? And equally, some of the missteps you might have made along the way as you've learned, and some of the advice you've been given. Have you kind of got a list of lessons at all?
Very good question. Very good question. My journey was that after I graduated and I bought my first practice, to wrap that section of the question up very quickly, is I then spent the next 3 to 5 years traveling most of the world learning orthodontics, business, and implantology and Crown and Bridge, as well as perio, right? But the commercial, what are the lessons that I've learned? One lesson I'm going to tell you is this, is watch what's going on in the motor vehicle industry. Believe it or not, if I have always used, because of people I know in the motor vehicle industry have told me that when sales of motor vehicles go up, dentists are going to make a lot more money. Now, we won't waste time in this interview going through all that, but that was one of the things. What are the good lessons that I've learned? Number one, if you're on something which is working, don't hold back, go for it harder. If times and conditions become difficult, if the economic conditions change, go harder. Find ways of extending your message. Now, when things started going tough during the economic change that was back in the 70s and 80s, that was around about the time that I started working on my advertising and marketing even harder than before. That was around about the time I started using different forms of marketing advertising, like I was sending out tea bags with messages to listen and learn. I started doing in-house promotions. When things get tough, you've heard the expression, when it gets tough, the tough get going. That was number one. Number two, don't sell anything. If you do anything in business, let's just step outside dentistry. If you buy some commercial property or some residential property, don't sell it. Keep it. Don't sell it. Keep hanging property, because that's what you need to do. The lessons in dentistry that I learned, some of the things you should not do. Do not hire people that don't have any vision. So when you interview dentists, when you interview your nurses, when you interview your receptionists, don't ask them, are you a good dental nurse? Do you know how to mix cement? Ask them, what is your vision? If they don't have a vision, don't continue the interview. Hire dentists that actually want to aspire to things. When we interview dentists, we tell them, well, what are you going to bring to us? And they say nothing. They don't get past door one. When you hire a dentist, you say, well, we want you to go to America and learn how to do pinhole surgical technique. And the first person that put her hand up was this young Chilean girl that we interviewed. Well, you know, 2 years later, there she is doing pinhole surgery 2 or 3 days a week.
Great.
So that's it. When you hire people, do not hire ex-dental nurses or ex-dental people. Most of the people I've got running my joint are not former dental nurses. The person that runs the business manager part of my dental business is actually someone from commerce, from industry. She used to work in a business, which she doesn't want me to name, so we'll just say she's a commercially orientated person. Don't hire practice manager, you know, an ex-dental nurse, unless they've got some sort of vision. The second thing is, in that area, don't hire someone that's going to be your surrogate wife or husband. Some years ago, I had somebody working in my dental practice who started treating me like I was their personal property, right? And when I said I wanted to expand the business, she said, what do you want to do that for? So there's another lesson. If you've got if you've got someone that you've hired who doesn't want to go on the same journey as you, get rid of them or don't hire them in the first place. I think the other thing you need to do, and this is a big, big lesson which I've learned all the way along, is train, 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 train. Most dentists, you go in there and say, well, how often are you training your staff? Oh, well, I don't. I said, well, what are you doing to get them motivated? Well, nothing, you know. I think another lesson you can learn, I mean, we train constantly. We are always training the nursing staff, the reception staff, the dental staff. You know, we've got lunch and learns once a week. We've got training sessions going on all year round. We're sending people overseas. I think another lesson there, Jesse, is invest in your staff. If you go to a dental practice and you say to them, well, you know, what about sending Dr. Smith overseas to learn how to do, you know, fast braces? they'll say, oh, no, we can't afford that, you know. And when I read on these websites, some of the things on Facebook, et cetera, oh, you know, what's the cheapest wage I can pay someone to get them to, you know, these sorts of lessons. My father, who was a small businessman, he had a small sandwich shop. He said the first and most important lesson you learn is invest in your staff. They are your business, right? They are your business. You might have the dental skills and the commercial skills, but if your staff aren't there supporting you, you've got no chance. I think that's most of the lessons I've written down, Jesse. I hope I haven't missed anything.
No, that's fantastic. And there's a couple of things I'd like to plumb into there, Harry, because there's something you've shared which I think is absolute gold. Well, lots of stuff that you've shared which is absolute gold. And putting this into the context of East Bentley Dental Group, you know, when I talk to the guys I work with about, you know, scaling particularly, yeah, there's this shift from being, you know, Dr. Jesse Green Dentist Proprietary Limited to being, you know, practice owner, business owner. The shift really has to, you know, transition from being the guy or girl who, you know, delivers great care to patients, and that's fine, but it has to transition to being the person who can build and lead a great team. And what you're saying, if I'm getting the message really clearly, is that, you know, all that investment you've put into your team, all that training, all the stuff that, you know, the vision at the outset, all came together to combine for you to be able to create the leveraged and scaled operation that is now East Bentley Dental Group. Because you had a vision, B, you invested in your team, C, you trained and trained and trained and trained and then trained some more. And ultimately that all came together so that, you know, Dr. Harry no longer had to be the guy on the tools all day.
Jesse, I could not have expressed it better myself. In fact, I'm going to let you run the interview now. You hit it in one. And you know what's happened now is the staff now wake up on Monday morning and they come in with an idea. You know, and I always said to them, I said, bring any ideas you've got to me. I'm happy to listen, right? Most dentists that I talk to, I said, what you do to encourage your staff to come up with ideas? You know, you just don't hear it. The staff came to me a few weeks ago and they said, look, we're not doing enough. Here's one for you. We're not doing enough to improve our public profile. I said, yep, well, because a few years ago we donated a whole bunch of money to send a very sick little Victorian girl to Disneyland with her mum and grandma because she was extremely unwell and we didn't know what we could do to help. So we just took a whole bunch of money and did this. And we weren't looking for kudos from it. We got some, of course, because, you know, people hear about it. And so the girls came to see me and they said, look, we need to do something. I said, you know what? You're right. I said, the Good Friday appeal is coming up. You know what we're going to do? We're going to donate a whole bunch of money to the Good Friday appeal and we're just going to do it nicely, quietly, gently, you know, blah, blah. Anyway, Good Friday appeal came around and David Koch, you know, did this thing with Effie and blah, blah, blah. Look, you know what? We did it. It wasn't even about the money. It was the staff saying, you know what? We love working here because you've got a public profile which people really love. And the staff walk around beating their chest, Jesse, when people in the supermarket say, oh, you work at East Bentley Dental Group. We were so happy to hear they made such a huge donation to the Royal Children's Hospital. You know, there are things that are just gold, Jesse, that you don't even think about have anything to do with running a dental practice, but they are absolute integral. They are commercial reality. Things that you have to do that you've got to do to make people believe and show that you've got a heart and a soul as well as just a commercial business venture.
Yeah, and that's the thing I really love about that Good Friday appeal and even, you know, sending the young girl and her mum to Disneyland is, yeah, Harry, I mean, that yes, it's good marketing and that's all fine, but let's just put that aside for a moment. That is one human being doing something nice for another human being. And I think that's absolutely the best marketing that there is anyway, but it's not done for that reason. It's done just because it's about improving the life of someone else. And I think that's wonderful, mate.
Yeah, well, that's how it comes back. When people come to see you and they walk in and they say, oh, well, and I say, well, why did you come here? You know, because they often hear us on the radio, blah, blah, blah. And I say, no. I actually was speaking to my next door neighbor. This was last week. So I speak to my next door neighbor and they said, oh, you know, we go to the practice that, you know, does all this wonderful stuff for the community. I mean, that just, I get a golden smile, Jesse, which just makes me jump out of my skin because the staff are walking around going, isn't this great working here? You know, we are such a sustainable future. That's what I talk to the girls about. How can we be sustainable in this industry? You know, it's not about just doing the good dentistry. It's about being sustainable where the public say to their friends, go to East Bentley Dental Group, because not only do they do good dentistry, they are good people. That's a huge, huge golden banner, right? Massive. You can't even buy that sort of marketing.
Yeah. No, you can't. And not only that, Harry, how good is that golden smile you're talking about? Doesn't it just light you up? It's wonderful. We are going to wrap up in a second, mate, because I know you've got a fairly chockers day, and I really, on behalf of everyone here at Savvy Dentist, appreciate you taking the time. But before we do let you go and do some stuff, I wanted to just think about really quickly for a moment. Harry, if you were, I know this is trying to be reductionist here, and I don't want to cut things down for the sake of cutting things down, but I want to try and distill a few things down into their essence. If we were to distill practice ethos or practice management, practice ownership, leadership, whatever language you want to use, according to Harry Margett, to a billboard or a bumper sticker, what would be a couple of golden rules from Harry?
The first golden rule, and thank you for that, Jesse, is you've got a golden throat with words.
Man, you're a good man.
The first and most important thing is work with your staff. Listen to what they have to say. Be open. Be ready to receive messages from the staff. Number two, to be a leader, the only way you're going to run an effective dental practice is be a leader. Now, sometimes to be a leader, you have to do things that you don't necessarily like doing. For example, you might have to get down on the floor and fix the plumbing or fix the coat machine or sweep the floor or make the tea or make the biscuits. Never be bigger than the lowest job on the lowest job denominator. Three, you've really got to understand people. Every year, Jesse, we get people to write a review of one of their own staff members. Every year we get a massive amount of letters from staff saying, you know what, I think Rosemary does a fantastic job. She's back there in Sterry, doing a job day by day. Not a lot of people get to talk to her, but she's smiling all the time. And, and then we go and do our pay reviews. So, you know what, Be humanistic, be involved, be ready, be open, and work at an ethereal level where people realize that you've actually got some feeling towards them. If one of the girls is sick, we don't let that go. We call up, we send flowers, we say, look, we're sorry to hear you're not well. We know that you'd love to come to work, but you're not there. Be human, be involved. When one of the staff, I read something on a website recently where, someone was complaining that the practice manager wasn't coming and she was sick and her mother was sick and what am I going to do and how am I going to pay her? We had people that were sick once for 7 weeks. We continued to pay them. Why? Because we showed them in that instance that we respect the fact that they are a hardworking, dedicated person and this is not about money. Well, that person came in and said to me when she came back to work, Harry, I will always be here to help you no matter what. No matter what happens at any time, because the love and dedication you put into this place is legendary. That's what being a leader is. Being a leader is having the staff absolutely respect you and be prepared to virtually go into battle for you at any time. And you only get that, Jesse, by putting in at levels that some dentists would never even dream about, because they just never, ever touch the sensitivity and the humanistic side of people. I think the secret is, and to sum up, is be involved with your people. Show them that you've got capacity. Show them you've got leadership. Show them that you will go into bat for them no matter what it is. If one of them loses their husband loses his job and hasn't got any money, don't cut off their pay. Don't suddenly say, well, you can't, you're not coming to work, we're not going to pay you. Be human. Show a bit of love. You'll get it back in droves.
Harry, I love that. That is absolutely wonderful advice. Just on that last little segment alone, I can see why East Bentley Dental Group's been around for so long and will be around for so much longer, Harry. I think it's a wonderful legacy that you're leaving behind there for East Bentley Dental and continue to operate, of course. But it's a business, Harry, that we're all human, we're all mortal, and I guarantee you East Bentley Dental's going to outlive all of us. So well done to you, mate. That's wonderful.
Very kind. I must say it is very enlightening when I know that a lot of my staff have been there over 25 years and longer.
Yeah, isn't that great?
Yeah.
I tell the other enlightening thing that happens, Harry, and I don't know if you've experienced this, is when you employ someone who was born after you graduated. That's something I've experienced recently. I just went, oh, goodness.
Oh, yeah, mate.
Don't you
worry. I've learned that lesson.
Oh, dear, dear. Hey, Harry, as always, it's a lot of fun to talk to you, mate. And equally, as always, it's filled with lots of valuable lessons and insights. And I really, you know, from all of us here at Savvy Dentists, I want to say thanks, mate. You're a gem and you're an institution, and rightly so, mate. You're wonderful. So thank you.
Incredible pleasure, Jesse. And as I said in the past, anything I can ever do to help you or your organisation, it's always a pleasure.
Thanks, mate. Really hope you enjoyed the conversation we had with Dr. Harry Margaret today. As you can see, he's had enormous success in his own practice at East Bentley Dental Group. And what I love about what Harry talks about is, you know, even though he goes against some of the current orthodoxy, what Harry's talking about are principles that are tried and true, things that work no matter what the economic climate, whether it's the 70s, 80s, 90s, noughties and beyond. Harry's success is undisputed. And what he's shared is, you know, gem after gem, gold nugget after gold nugget of information that is really, really practical. Things that you can take into your own practice. And, you know, what I loved about, you know, Harry and his conversation today is how he started his practice with the specific intent of creating a leveraged operation. So for anyone wanting to do that, I'd really encourage you to take some great notes and put them into practice first thing on Monday morning. So I hope you have a great week, and until next time, bye for now.
Thank you for listening to the Savvy Dentist podcast. For more episodes, go to drjessegreen.com/savvydentist. And to discover how to build a high-performance dental practice, visit drjessegreen.com and download the free report.